Hey guys, it's me, the Rizzler. Sorry. Hi, it's me, Vince. How are you? I hope you guys are well. Welcome to episode 282 of Atomic Radio Hour, baby. Welcome. I hope you guys are doing well. I hope you guys are enjoying yourselves. There's a lot of things to talk about today, a lot of fun, a lot of things that I'm very, 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 very excited for. To start off, I'd just like to say real quick something that I didn't say about 20 weeks ago that I should have, and I just didn't. As of like 20 weeks ago, I have done over, as of this point, I've done over 100 of these episodes by myself. It was 100 when the show became myself officially. I believe it was like 156, if I remember correctly. When I believe I made it public that it was just going to be me was 160. So it's either been, give or take, it's either 160, it was me officially, and then 164, I said something. It's somewhere in that ballpark of like 8 weeks. It's like mid 150 to mid 160 whenever it happened. I just, you know, little back pats for myself, because, you know, it's hard to start a podcast. It's hard to do it by yourself. The show went from being an hour to being about 30 minutes every week, just because there wasn't a second person to bounce ideas off of and have a conversation with. But thanks for sticking around. It's just something that, like, I feel like we should track milestones and we should talk about things that are important to us, especially because of the passage of time. Hope you guys are well. Hope you guys are enjoying yourselves. This episode is probably, I'm going to be completely honest with you, probably going to come out a little bit later on Saturday. What I usually do is record on Wednesdays. I'll edit the beginning of it, maybe about an hour past, or just to do audio, just do the green screen, maybe just the bulk edit, and then I'll do a little bit on Friday, render everything, put it out. But the new Godzilla comes out on Friday in America, called Godzilla Minus One, and it's a Japanese Godzilla being released in American theaters, and I am not missing the opportunity to see this movie. So this is probably going to come out, this episode's probably going to come out on Saturday. They all come out on Saturday, but it's going to come out probably a little bit later. If it comes out on time, hey, egg on my face, in a good way. But I'm just letting you know that now ahead of time. I'm just excited to see this movie. I've heard fantastic things from the Japanese audiences that have seen it. I haven't heard anything from any American audiences from people who have seen it, but it's a Godzilla movie, something that I'm very passionate about, and I'm really, really looking forward to seeing it. I was going to do something this week with the Game Awards coming up with Kyle, but to be completely honest, I didn't play anything this year. My Game of the Year, I believe, came out last year, so I just thought it would be kind of pointless for me to talk about what I think my Game of the Year is, when the Game of the Year is Mario Wonder, a game I've played a couple levels of, Spider-Man, which I haven't played, Starfield isn't on it. That's like the only game I played from this year. I actually saw something incredible about Starfield today that I didn't know was possible. Kind of spoiled the game a little bit for me, but it was super cool to see. There's a ton of detail and a ton of attention that has gone into Starfield, and it very much is a slow burn game. I feel like Starfield is honestly kind of reminds me of The Last of Us 2 in the way that I think Starfield isn't going to be truly, truly, truly appreciated until a few years have gone by, and that's when you'll see people come back and be like, oh, the mod support is great, and the story is better than we remember it, and this and that. And I'm sure we'll get videos that are like, Starfield is actually terrific, here's why, or Starfield is actually garbage, here's why, just because that's how the internet is. But no, I was going to do something for the Game Awards with Kyle, and just with timing, and I believe this comes out, and then like 3 or 4 or 5 days later, the Game Awards happens. It didn't work out this year. And I know we normally do something. We usually do a big thing for E3. We talk about what we want to see, what we think we're going to see, what has been teased already, and then we talk about what had happened. But it's the Game Awards. There's going to be another, probably some kid trying to get on stage, like there's been for like the past two or whatever. But no, it's just, it seemed like something that was kind of all for naught. And I hope you don't miss it. I'm sorry if you do, but what are you going to do? There's a fun piece of lore that I'd really like to talk about today. So if you don't mind, I'd like to get into that. But before we get into that, I have to talk about the Patreon. Now, the Patreon is not mandatory. I appreciate anybody who even considers giving a dollar to the Patreon. The Patreon is used to make the show get bigger and better. There's always equipment. I really should buy a lighting kit. I use the house lighting in my bedroom, and one of the light bulbs has been out for a minute, and it's just the last thing I remember to grab is a light bulb. Every time I go to like Target, I'm like, oh, I gotta get a light bulb, and then I walk out and I have 15 things that aren't a light bulb. But I should get a lighting kit, even just a small little ring light, like I'm gonna do beauty videos, and you know, subscribing to the Patreon allows me to be able to go out and get stuff like that and do stuff for the show. And every year I pay my podcasting subscription with it. There, you could change your tier at any time from the $1 to the $10, the $1. Even at the $1, your voice is heard every week for the lore segment when I ask a question on the Patreon. But at the $10 tier, on about every Wednesday, you can hear these episodes get recorded live. And one of my favorite parts is if I do a bonus episode that I'm recording in the future for Kyle, you get to listen to it, and it's a surprise. And I love surprises. So you might sit down and go, okay, I got about 40 minutes of entertainment live in front of me. Turns out to really be closer to 2 hours because it's Kyle and I talk for a bit, and then we'll record, and then we'll talk for a little bit longer. This is on a bonus episode. And then the episode for the upcoming week happens, and then you get to see the process of like, oh, this is how a video is made. This is how an episode is recorded and what have you. Here are some people I have to thank. I'm going to start thanking these people real quick. These are people that give to the Patreon. First off, I have to thank the OG Noah. Thank you, Noah. After Noah, I have to thank Danny. Thank you to Danny. After Danny, I have to thank Marcus. Thank you, Marcus. For Marcus, I have to thank Mellow Millhouse. Thank you to Mellow Millhouse. And last, but certainly not least, I have to thank Captain Lennox. Thank you to Fine Lot for seeing something in me, seeing something in the show and wanting to give and help me grow something, carve out a small piece of the internet that I can share with other people. Genuinely means a lot to me. Been doing this for 5 years, and sometimes I forget how cool of an activity this is. And I just really just have been trying to be more appreciative of everything in my life and the people in my life, and just thank you. I love you guys. So every week I hit the Patreon and I go, hey, here's two people from the Fallout universe that I'd like to talk about. Which ones do you guys want to hear about? And at that $1 tier, at the lowest tier, from the 1 to the 10, your voice can be heard in help choosing this week's lore. So I went on there and I thought about what I wanted to talk about. And I feel like it's been a minute since I've talked about a vault. And I said, let's talk about a vault. There's also a person I'd really like to talk about. Someone who's just, I've been really on an evil character kick. I feel like with Azrakal, Vulpus and Culta, just to name a few of the people that I've been talking about lately, I've just been on like an evil character kick, someone who's just evil for the sake of evil. And I wanted to talk about Dr. Zimmer from Fallout 3. So I put it to the Patreon, got the poll results back. So if you want to hear any lore, and I mean any lore whatsoever, consider checking out the Patreon, because even at the $1 tier, your voice is heard, and you get to help choose what is this week's lore. And this week, by way of Patreon, I bring you the lore on Dr. Zimmer from Fallout 3, the director of the Institute's Synth Retention Bureau. In 2277, he could be found in Rivet City, where he is having a brief stay. Now, the Synth Retention Bureau is an entire branch of the Institute that its sole purpose, its only job, is to find, track and find and capture synths that have escaped from the Institute. His special are a strength of 3, perception of 6, endurance of 3, charisma of 4, intelligence of 8, agility of 6, and a luck of 5. And he's also 56 years old, which I have a question mark written down here that there's no way he's actually 56 years old. The man looks like he's about 80. Could have just been a mix-up. It's his age is from the official Fallout 3 guidebook, so I doubt that he's actually that age, and it was just a writer. He might have meant to even switch the 56 with the 65 or something, or what have you. Now, on January, February, March, April, May, June, July? July 10th of 2277, Syverson C, or C. Syverson, a terminal entry from the Institute, a scientist at the Institute, says, latest round of testing complete. Results are all in expected parameters. Informed Dr. Zimmer directly, as he had ordered the test personally. He seemed annoyed with the results, unsure what he was looking for. He declined to specify why he wanted the test to begin with, which I feel like is a very great, is a very decent way to be introduced to who this character is, even though this is the game that comes out after Fallout 3, the game we meet him in, because he's a man who wants things. And I don't think he's a man who thinks about the things he wants. He's either told he wants them or just wants them. And I think that's an overall theme with most of the Fallout games, if not all of them, is the themes of wanting, the themes of greed. And I feel almost like a broken record with how much I talk about it, but it is something that is so so inherent to evil characters in the series. They want things. And like, yes, we all want things, but why do you want things? For nefarious reasons or reasons that are going to benefit mankind and human forward? Do you want clean water because you want clean water, or do you want Aqua Pura because it's going to make you a dollar? Sometime after this log was made in the Institute, Zimmer left for DC for the Capital Wasteland in search of an android, what they were called before we had the term synths from Fallout 4 and Fallout 3, they referred to as androids. He's accompanied by a third-gen synth, Armitage. Zimmer hoped Madison Lee could help them find the escape synth A3-21. If you speak to Zimmer about A3-21, who we later find out is actually Harkness, the head of the security detail in Rivet City, Lone Wanderer can say, okay, so if others have escaped, why are you going after this one? And Dr. Zimmer can say, this particular android, designation A3-21, is different, special, the most advanced synthetic humanoid I've ever developed. The others, like my escort Armitage here, all are of older models, easily replicated. Ah, but A3-21, it would take years to replicate him. So you see, this android must be located at all costs. The others are acceptable losses, but A3-21, he's irreplaceable. And I think this plays a fun role into the idea of what is love for these characters. Like, what is love for humanity? What is love for other people? This is a person who sees a human, more or less, he's a Gen 3 synth, and a Gen 3 synth is essentially just a 3D printed human with a chip in his brain that makes him a synth. This is someone that he sees as a tool. He sees it as a robot. He sees it as something that he can use for his own personal gain. This is not a man who loves humanity. And even if he does love humanity, he sees himself higher than others. Because if it wasn't that he is a robot or an android or a synth, he is a better human of society, Zimmer is, than someone who, say, doesn't have the intelligence, doesn't have the aptitude that he does. He sees everybody as a commodity. Armitage is a Gen 3 synth. He can eat and digest food much like a human. Zimmer says A3-21 is further along. Is he a Gen 3.5 synth? Is he a prototype 4 synth? Gen 4 synth? Is Nate a Gen 4 synth? Now, if you've been here a minute, you know how I feel about Fallout 4. As time goes on, I like it more and more. In my view of the game, it's heavily implied that Nate was the first Gen 4 synth, a synth that you could not tell is synthetic. You could not tell that it is a 3D printed human. And I think that's kind of a retcon that will come about from Harkness. Now, is this because they didn't have the next game written 10 years in advance? Yeah, probably. I'm not dumb. I understand that. 8 years in advance? Yeah. Gen 3 synths are the most advanced that we can see. Magnolia, Mayor McDonough, Gen 3 synths, that we see them interact, behave like humans. Gen 4 synths have the ability to be even more than that, where they can enjoy other things, because all Armitage needs to eat is just basic food and basic water. He doesn't even really like have to indulge. He just needs the basics. Now, like I said, Dr. Zimmer's entire thing is if he got to Rivet City, he could find his synth because of the help of Dr. Lee. That was his plan. But once Zimmer got to Rivet City, Dr. Lee wanted nothing to do with him. The Lone Wanderer can ask, what do you know about Zimmer, to Dr. Lee? And she'll say, that man doesn't have you looking for his pet android, does he? I've already told him to lay off it. He's distracting my entire team. A conversation can be heard between Anna Holt, a botanist for Dr. Lee's team, and Dr. Zimmer. It goes a little something to the tune of, look, Dr. Zimmer, we've been over this. This is Anna Holt. We've been over this. We don't know about your runaway robot, and we don't care. This lab is dedicated to solving real problems, Dr. Zimmer will say. Yes, 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 but Dr. Lee, Anna Holt will say, Dr. Lee's trying to save lives, and your constant interruptions are interfering with those efforts. Now, please stand aside. Dr. Zimmer will say, I'm sure the good doctor's work with water purification is fascinating, but if you knew what was at stake, the technology and the android, Anna will cut him off and say, what is at stake? You won't tell me what is at stake. Vagaries and secrecy. A robot is a robot, Zimmer, no matter how shiny the paint job. Now, please, ignorance and facetiousness, Zimmer will reply with. It's all you people are good for. Shiny paint job indeed. You can't even imagine the Commonwealth's accomplishments. Anna Holt will then say back. You know, if you're so smart, maybe you could help us. Hmm? But no, that never crossed your mind. Go peddle your selfishness somewhere else. Fine. But I'm not leaving. Not until I've spoken to Dr. Lee. I'll be here when she's ready to abandon her chemistry set. Talk real science, says Zimmer. And Anna Holt will just reply with, suit yourself. You know, pursuits that the Institute would absolutely love to help with. Dr. Lee is in the Institute in Fallout 4. So if Zimmer would have been like, okay, I'm going to help you a little bit, or if you help me, I can guarantee I can have my men help you. She winds up going in the pursuit of a scientific field. To the point where she goes to be with some of the brightest minds on the planet. The Dr. Zimmer can also grab the Lone Wanderer and try to get the Lone Wanderer to help him out with his findings of A3-21 or Harkness for the Replicated Man quest. And he'll say, you there! What are you, some kind of lab assistant? No, you look a bit more weathered. Are you by chance for hire? Lone Wanderer said, that depends. What exactly are we talking about here? And Zimmer would say, to the point. I like that. This is a paraphrase. I'm taking a couple different snippets from what he says from this dialogue and taking the most important stuff. He goes, to the point. I like that. Well, as it turns out, I've misplaced some of my sensitive property. All you know of robots are those bucket of bolts, these Mr. Handshakes or what have you. You see, in the Commonwealth, we've made artificial persons, synthetic humanoids, regarded to think and feel and do whatever we need. And occasionally, they get confused and they wander off. The Lone Wanderer can ask, interesting, but what does this exactly have to do with me? And Zimmer will say, you're helping me retrieve the android, aren't you? He's out there, somewhere, in the Capital Wasteland. He must have done something drastic, like a facial surgery and maybe even a mind wipe, or else I would have found him by now. It'll be no easy task. He may not even realize he's an android. Don't upset him by talking with him. Just come and get me immediately, and I will handle it. And this starts that quest. Now, by 2287, we actually get to go into the Institute and see what's going on there. When you go to the Synth Retention Bureau, Zimmer is nowhere to be found, and he's not in the Commonwealth. He's reported missing. Justin Io is filling in for him in the Synth Retention Bureau, and if you ask him about it, he'll say he's supervising the retrieval of some of the more high-profile units in reference to Zimmer. In his absence, I, Justin Ayo, keep things running smoothly. There was actually a voice profile for him to be in Fallout 4, but he does not appear. There is something about a man who, he's very much a Burke, I feel like, Dr. Zimmer. He's very much a Mr. Burke, where he is a character who is doing things to justify the ends to his own means. He doesn't necessarily believe in the Institute, but he knows the Institute is safe, will keep him fed, he will have some place to be, and will pay him. And he gets to leave the Institute, which is something that people inside of the Institute don't necessarily get to do all of the time. And that is somewhat of a luxury. And I'm sure that he probably waves that in people's faces, especially a man of his age out there exploring. Is a dangerous man with resources. He's a piece of garbage. And I can see him flaunting that he's a piece of garbage to other people, and they can't really say much because they feel like they're trapped. I hope you've enjoyed that. That was a fun character for me to talk about, but that is everything I have for this week's lore. Boy, oh boy, do I have a third segment for you guys today. The Fallout show that is coming to Amazon looks amazing behind me. If it hasn't already started, if you're curious about spoilers, maybe don't watch this part, but you could at least listen. There will be, I believe it's 7 or 8 photos from the Vanity Fair article that I'm about to be reading snippets of to talk to you about what this show possibly could look like. Some of these props, the Brotherhood of Steel Knights, the Paladins, Walton Goggins as a ghoul. I love ghouls, and he doesn't have big ass teeth in this. Just everything about this feels right so far. Do I have rose colored glasses on? Probably. I'm aware of this, but this is what we have right now, and the show comes out in April, and I'm so very excited to talk about this and give you my thoughts and opinions. Breaking news! Hey everybody, this is me from the editing bay, in the future, but somehow the past. I woke up this morning and saw that the Fallout Amazon show trailer had dropped. Just bad timing on my end, really, that this happened and I didn't get to put this out. So there will be a link in the description to the trailer if you haven't already seen it. It looks really good. Just genuinely really, really, really good. There's a lot about it that I'd like to talk about. The fact that we get to see like a real ghoul and we get to see Walton Goggins and his big ass teeth before, and the song they chose, the Nat King Cole song, fits really, really well. I'm not huge on the emphasis of the Brotherhood. Like, I knew they were going to be there, but I think Fallout has evolved to the point where maybe we don't need the Brotherhood constantly. That's just my own real gripe. The vault stuff looks cool. There's some Leela from Futurama looking ass Overseer. The Overseer just has like one eye, which I would love to know why. I want to know what the vault experiment is. Why does the Overseer have an eye? Not to an eye, but oon. It's a good trailer. It's a good thing to start with. I wonder how tone deaf it kind of is, though. The one thing that really bothered me is that Amazon also does The Boys. And in the beginning, it said the studio that brought you The Boys and 2-day shipping. And is that like a campy on the nose way of saying the game about consumerism brought to you by the company that is slowly destroying the planet? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we have 2-day shipping, but also we have a booth that you can go scream in. And if your break, a 15-minute break, is 15 minutes and 2 seconds because you didn't get back right away, you're fired. And if you deliver for us, you have to piss in a bottle. So, like, is it this meta-contextual? I doubt it. Is it a meta-contextual thing that Amazon was like, we'll do it, and then they're going to slowly, like, make fun of things like Amazon in it? I doubt it. But the world of Fallout is so much, this is what greed is, this is what consumerism is, this is what capitalism does to us. And then the company that just bought $500 million worth of homes to turn it into residential area for their workers, to make them pretty much akin to the coal mining people, the coal mine workers, the miners. What had happened to them in the 1800s in this country? Anyway, it's a very good trailer. It has me very excited. I like the big swaths of openness, open nothingness. It would be behind me, but I'm pretty sure they would take the entire video down, and I'm not re-editing this. When I was doing Lizard Brains, I would put the Godzilla trailers behind me, or at least like on screen somewhere, and it would be an hour-long video, and it would be 2 minutes of that, and Toho would like strike the entire video. So, enjoy the rest of the episode. I'm very much looking forward to it. I talk about the Vanity Fair article. I hope you've seen it. I hope you've enjoyed it. I love you very much. Enjoy the rest of the episode. So like I said, Vanity Fair recently had some things to say. They interviewed the director. They interviewed Todd Howard. Some things I want to talk about. Vanity Fair, this is written, these are snippets that I've taken from the entire article. It's written by Anthony Breziakan. Again, I think it's like a law that if you have a hard last name, you have to join journalism so nobody can quote you properly, which makes me think maybe because I have a hard last name, I should have got into journalism. After the incendiary mushroom clouds, the story flashes forward 219 years. How did humanity fare over those two centuries? Lucy, one of the lead characters, has no clue. She has lived her entire life inside a subterranean vault, where every need and want was satisfied while generations and generations await the day it is safe to surface. So I'm assuming the first episode will heavily, heavily talk about what vaults are, vault life. There's a couple things in here that I don't understand that I'm going to get to. Like, I don't know if I wrote it down here, but they're going to give lore on the Vault Boy. Why does the Vault Boy need lore? Like, if you're going to show me Vault Tech going over like the meeting of like, what's our mascot going to be like? Hey, we hired one of the people from Nuka World. He was recommended highly from John Caleb Bradburton. He designed Cappy and Bottle. And we hired that guy, told him what we were going for, what we were looking for. And because of that, we have now the Vault Boy. That makes sense. I'm okay with that. That's cool. But like, what kind of lore does the Vault Boy have? You don't play as the Vault Boy. The Vault Boy is not a real character. He's in a tactics game, but he's kind of like an Easter egg type character. When a crisis forces Lucy to venture above on a rescue mission, remains a hellscape crawling with giant insects, various mutant animal abominations, and a human population of sunbaked miscreants who make the manners, morals, and hygiene of the gunslinging Old West. Lucy is nice, but Lucy is naive. In the Fallout universe, humans that begin fortunate enough to ride out the apocalypse in underground communities only had that option available to them because they had money, which isn't entirely true. Some of it was just social engineering. They were tricks. Yes, the intended result was to get to space eventually because the Enclave was trying to start a new society, but it wasn't even necessarily money. Like, Vault 15, which later becomes Shady Sands, is expressed that it's just multicultural generations that then left the vaults after the bombs had dropped. It's never said that they had money. I don't really think any vaults were based on money or esteem or power outside of like the one you find in Far Harbor that was just money, and then they put brains into robots. And it was, even then, they let in all the poor people just to show them like wealth disparity and shit. So I think that what they're alluding to here without even realizing is that the vault itself is going to be a vault that is primarily just people that are affluent. The director, Jonathan Nolan, says, So many of us have such naive ideas, even now, about everyone else's experience. And it's one of those things I love about America. It's this giant, manic collection of different experiences, different points of view. Lucy is charming and plucky and strong, and then you see she's confronted with reality of, hey, maybe the supposed virtuous things you grew up with are not necessarily virtuous. If they are virtuous, they've coached us in circumstantial virtuosity. It's a luxury virtue. You have your point of view because you never ran out of food, right? You guys were able to share everything because you had enough to share. The following are some quotes from Todd Howard. We had a lot of conversations over the style of humor, the level of violence, the style of violence. Look, Fallout can be very dramatic and dark and post-apocalyptic, but you need to weave in a little bit of a wink. I think they threaded the needle really well on the TV show. In reference to the Vault Boy, saying that not only does the Vault Boy show up in the show, but the imagery even gets its own origin story, which they claim they're not going to spoil in the article, and they don't. Todd Howard says, that was something that they came up with, and I just think it's really smart. Fans of the game should know that everything... This is not a quote, this is the article. Fans of the game should know that everything in the series is officially part of Fallout lore, and Bethesda careful to make sure the scripts could coexist with previous storylines from the gaming titles. We view what's happening in the show as canon, says Todd Howard. That's what's great when someone else looks at your work and then translates it in some fashion. He admits to being envious at some points of the TV show interpretation and saying things like, I sort of looked at it like, why didn't we think to do that? For years, people had approached Bethesda, had approached Todd Howard to make a Fallout TV show or movie, and everything was very much, I don't want to make Fallout 3 the movie. I've already told that story. I want to make something different, which makes sense with the way the show is starting to shape up to us. Todd Howard says he and the team at Bethesda were sold when Jonathan Nolan, the director, and his team proposed building an entirely new story within the existing world of Fallout. Lucy's journey intersects with two other lead characters who are new to the universe. One of them is the wannabe soldier Maximus, who grew up above ground, but like Lucy, was also raised in a family of sorts, a brutal collective of warriors called the Brotherhood of Steel. He will be a squire. One of the things the director said in this interview, one of the things that we are trying to gently sidestep here is that kind of binary thinking. Like, there are good guys or there are bad guys. Whoever is the good guy and the bad guys were, they destroyed the entire world. So now we're going to have much more of a gray area. Then there's Fallout's wild card, its third lead figure, my favorite, figure so far. The sinister bounty hunter known as the Ghoul, played by Walton Goggins. The Ghoul is a gruesomely scarred Rough Rider who has a code of honor. He is the good, the bad, and the ugly all rolled into one. He also is quite a survivor, having existed for hundreds of years. The show occasionally flashes back to the human being he once was, a father and a husband named Cooper Howard, before the nuclear blast turned the world into a cinder and transformed him into an undead non... He's not undead. He's a post-necrotic human. He's not undead. I don't tolerate no ghoul slander over here on my good Christian podcast. He became a sharpshooting fiend. Not a fiend, but like, he's a bounty hunter. In the Fallout games, ghouls are typically cannon fodder, mindless zombies, which they're not. Whose bodies have been mutated by radiation. This ghoul is a legend, distinct among his kind for his cleverness and his cunning. There's still something for Cooper Howard in the... There's still something of Cooper Howard in the person he used to be within his new form. Walton's equally adept at drama and comedy, which is so difficult, says the director. There is a chasm in time and distance between the guy... who the guy was and who the guy became, which for me creates an enormous amount of dramatic tension. What happened to this guy? So we'll walk backwards into that. He compares the ghoul to the poet Virgil in Dante's Inferno, someone in a hellish landscape, knows its full scope, origin, and secrets. He becomes our guide and our protagonist in that older world, even as we understand him to be the antagonist at the end of the world, Nolan says. If Lucy is innocent for the show, if Lucy is the innocent of the show, then the ghoul is the polar opposite. Damaged and hardened by his centuries of endless life in a state near death, he's got a lot of mileage on him, but he's still got swagger and a kind of a charm to him, says Nolan. Like the anti-heroes of the world, Fallout has to maintain the appeal despite its grim aspects. It's a dark world in many ways, says Nolan. But the games were fun to play, fun to explore, and I think that was a mandate for us, to make sure that it's enjoyable to spend time in the universe. That's somebody who gets it. If the director goes, the games are fun and they can be dark, but they're fun to walk around in. This is also a character that is a ghoul. He has 200 years of experience. This man's penis no longer works and is presumably a heterosexual if he had a child. He could be a gay man who adopted, but hear me out. My point is made either way. He is a person who presumably has gone hundreds of years without any sort of sexual relationship. This is a man who misses the feeling of touch, of soft skin touching his soft skin. This is a man who's lived outside. This is a man whose skin, he doesn't look the way he once did. When he was pink and fleshy, he is now rough and red. This is the character I'm like most. I don't care about the Brotherhood. I'll be completely frank with you. The Brotherhood to me is... slowly become the most boring part of Fallout. Oh, the guys in the armor. It was cool in Fallout 1. It's fantastic in Fallout 1. It's cool in Fallout 2 how they get involved with Tandy for Vault City. Great. Fallout 3, I'll even give you the extent of seeing how the East Coast Brotherhood has differed from the West Coast because they want to survive. And then how Maxon goes, my daddy wouldn't like this. And then changes everything. I'm fine with the Brotherhood. I hope the next Fallout game does not have the Brotherhood as a main focal point. I hope Power Armor's in it because I feel like it has to be. I just hope that the Brotherhood is not a main focal point of the game. Maybe you meet a small group of people in a pocket and it's like, hey, we just got here. And it's like, you can influence them whether they're going to stick around or they're going to leave. That'd be super dope. I do not care whatsoever about the Brotherhood. Even in the article, I didn't have it written down, but it leans a little too much, for my opinion, on the patriotism because the Brotherhood isn't supposed to be patriotic. The Brotherhood is supposed to be a group of people that stays to themselves to make sure that what had happened in the old world doesn't happen again. At all costs, we need to make sure that doesn't happen a second time. They were a pseudo-cult. They were vaguely religious. I am very excited for this show. For the ghoul alone, I really want to see what the vaults look like. I want to know what this vault is, what its experiment is. It sounds like it's going to be something of affluent people. I'm really, really excited to see how this is going to play out. It's April, baby, like right before 420. It's either right before or right after. So, you know, toke up, watch the show, have a good time. I'm excited. I never thought I'd be excited for a Fallout show. I thought if anything, it was going to do a disservice to the program, to the show, to the game, to everything. But from what I read and the director, especially that last line of, I think the world should be fun because the games are fun to explore. I think he gets it. I really do. In the comments below, please let me know how you're feeling about the Fallout Amazon show. I'd love to hear. I'd love to know what you think it's going to be. How many episodes you think it's going to be? It's going to be obviously be an hour. It's just what shows are now, especially dramas like this. I'm just excited to see it. I hope we get a trailer sometime soon. I wouldn't be surprised if we get a trailer like January 1st. It's like, get ready. 4 months from now, this is coming out. That's all I have for you this week. I hope you guys enjoyed. My name has been Vince. Thank you for sticking around with me. There's links in the description below to my Twitter, Kyle's Twitter, the show's Twitter. There we go. There's also a link down there to the Patreon. Consider checking us out if you like the program. I would give it a look-see. Even at the $1 tier, your voice is always heard. There's also a link down there to the Redbubble where you can support in a smaller way if you'd like, and you get something physical out of it. I hope you guys are well. I hope you guys are enjoying yourselves. The holidays are right around the corners. Right around the corner. It's going to be here before you know it. I love you guys, and I'll be seeing you very, very shortly. I'll see you next week. I love you. Bye.
Atomic Radio Hour Podcast.
This has been a production made by your friends at Ghoulman Entertainment.